Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well, that's ambitious.
Here's John Williams.
Mr. President, it is necessary to choose between two admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless,
Lord have mercy,
distinguishable post-war environments.
Now, what are they talking about there? I know what that was about. Bob Kessler named the movie from which that cut comes.
Dr. Strangelove.
Ding, 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 ding. There's a certain number of us who absolutely know that. That's one of my all-time favorite movies.
I've been to one World's Fair picnic in a rodeo, and that's the stupidest thing I ever heard come over a set of headphones.
I can quote a lot of lines from that movie.
Sure can.
Yeah.
Was that Slim Pickens?
Yep. Ding, ding, ding. And I was just thinking about that movie when I saw the story that the Russians are flying more and more planes off the Alaska coast. They're just picking on us. They're just sort of flicking our ear. If an Air Force could flick another Air Force's ear, that's what's happening right now. They're just going, come on, boink. Come on, boink. You want some of this, boink. That's what Russia's doing.
Yeah, I've been watching the show The Americans, so that's what.
Oh, my wife is into that. Is that pretty awesome? I haven't seen it yet.
It's awesome. It's actually not really about espionage. It's about sex.
Like all good cable things.
Yeah.
It's like this really good show about women in prison, or it's this really good show about drugs or something. Actually, the show about drugs was about drugs, but they do get in their sex.
Well, this one they do.
Game of Thrones. Oh, Lord. They have gratuitous sex
scenes.
Known
for that, yeah.
Or at least they did for a while.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call The Americans gratuitous. I actually think the show is an examination of sex.
No kidding, really.
Yeah,
the Americans.
I really do. I think
it's, talk to
I
Brenda
think it's
about
smart
that.
That way.
I was asking Brenda, I said, that really good show. She said, yeah, I really like it. She didn't tell me about this part.
Oh, every 5 minutes.
We're watching different TVs.
Sex always equals, in that show, someone's trying to get information from the other person, so they have sex with them. And they've had one, I can think of one scene where the sex was genuine between the two people who were like, you know.
You mean where they were affectionate?
It was love.
Yeah, making love.
It wasn't
love.
Like I'm trying to find something out.
Wow. Because I'm downstairs watching the Blackhawks, and that's depressing. Brenda's riveted to the other TV set.
Yep.
Huh. You know, in Game of Thrones, when you have to tell a story, when you have to move the narrative along, that's called exposition. And sometimes stories will develop that way, where you go, all right, this isn't the most intriguing part of the show, but we'll go ahead and let them talk, explain, so we can get to the next awesome thing. In Game of Thrones, they had a phrase, they called it sexposition. And that is, they would do the exposition while they were in one of the bathhouses and all kinds of carnal things were going on. Or they were laying in a bed and it was this sort of orgy scene. That would be the sexposition. I mean,
or
if you get
sexpository dialogue, is there?
Okay, back. Getting back to Russia's bombers and the flicking of our Air Force's ears, this from CNN, Dateline Earth, Russian military aircraft were spotted flying off the coast of Alaska for the fourth time in as many days, a U.S. defense official told CNN today. The two most recent sightings occurred late Wednesday and Thursday. Russian aircraft never entered U.S. airspace, but the North American Aerospace Defense Command did, in fact, dispatch some U.S. F-22s. We got the Canadians up there with the CF-18s to perform intercepts. Nobody fired at anybody, but they're all just flying along saying, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, what you got? CNN says while these flights pose no real military threat, U.S. defense officials are taking notice of the high frequency at which they've occurred. Quote, there is no other way to interpret this than as strategic messaging, an official told CNN. So we reached out to Joel Ostrow again. He is a professor of political science at Benedictine University. He's our Russian expert. He's going to explain some of this to us. And maybe it's not a long conversation we need to have, Joel, because I suspect there really isn't that much to it, right?
Well, good afternoon, John, and
welcome back.
Me on again.
You betcha. Nice to hear you.
Well, I can tell you it has nothing to do with sex, since, unless in some weird way the compromising materials on Trump that came out in the fall are somehow relevant again. And,
right.
And that's just a little disgusting.
That's them holding up the pictures in the window going, yeah. Look what we got. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of that.
You described it right as sort of flicking the U.S.
Yeah,
flicking
sort of
tweaking us.
Yeah.
But is it more than messaging? I think that might. If it were just messaging, I'm not sure that we would also be scrambling fighters and sort of escorting them on their path. We wouldn't say out of U.S. airspace because there's no report that Russian fighters have entered U.S. airspace yet. But, and this is the kind of thing that was normal during the Cold War, the sort of cat and mouse games that we would fly near Russian or near Soviet at that time airspace, and they would fly near ours, and we'd measure each other's responses and try and gain some information on capabilities, whether radar capabilities or airplane capabilities or communication capabilities. And, it was a daily occurrence then.
Why do you think they're doing it now?
I think there are, it's certainly not a coincidence. So that the notion of messaging is relevant in the sense that this follows on the heels of a number of incidents, including what we talked about the last time, the U.S. launch of cruise missiles against a base in Syria in response to the chemical weapons attack. And that was a base where there were many Russian personnel nearby. There's other areas of instability of strategic importance, whether we're talking about North Korea or, again, the U.S. is talking about the Iran nuclear accords. And this is, I'm sure, Russia trying to gauge the U.S. response to get some information on whether we notice, how we notice, what we do in the face of the fact that, as I've said before, our own administration to others looks to be spasmodic, inconsistent, unpredictable. So we can also interpret this as the Kremlin trying to gain a measure of information to help them predict, engage our responses in relation to their own actions.
Well, if somebody was gaining strategic information, like here's how sophisticated their radars are, or here's how quickly they can get a plane to intercept our bomber, I get that. I never thought about that. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's what it is, and then fine. Everybody wins, or at least there's some sense to it. That's what I want, is some logic, some sense to it. Because what I more get the feeling, Joel, is that this is just a bunch of 12-year-old boys running two of the nuclear powers, and one of them is sort of teasing the other. And then, but the upshot is that the thing spirals upward then. Then we tweet more hostile rhetoric, and then they say more hostile things. And that kind of language isn't just schoolyard. It has consequences. You can see the world sort of tightening its stomach over this sort of thing, you know?
Well, as we discussed before, it would be wrong to look at any one of these events in isolation, whether it's the U.S. Launching of cruise missiles or Russia's flying these planes, in the Arctic region or near Alaska. Things are connected. There's if the Kremlin has, a consistent set of objectives and guidelines and principles that it's pursuing in the world over the last 4 to 5 years. The U.S., pretty much, it's very difficult to predict where we stand on anything or what we will do in response to anything. And while I don't like Russia's foreign policy strategy, I certainly, I don't agree with it. I find it dangerous. You do know what they're after. They're after expanding Russia's influence and where they can, undermining our influence. And so this is, it's not a coincidence that these flights are happening now. I do think it's about gathering intelligence, gathering information, and sending a message consistently that Russia's here and we have to deal with it, and trying to, perhaps they're trying to gain information that will help to, in their minds, give them some kind of understanding over what the current administration in Washington is about, and trying to learn what is it that they want and how does it behave, because it's a dangerous world when that information is not shared. By
I guess so, but I mean,
but
we're not going to shoot at them. We're not going to drop bombs on them. We're not going to shoot those bombers or those reconnaissance planes out of the sky. I kind of just think this is, I mean, this is reassuring, or me reassuring myself. Tell me if this is right, Joel. All of this is posturing. That's fine. I can live with that. There's no real military threat here, right?
There's a military threat if there's a military type of problem that emerges between the U.S. and Russia. So there's several pieces of information. As tensions increase between the U.S. and Russia, Russia's military wants to fly whatever training or exercise missions that they fly, and we will fly ours. That is a marker of worsening relations.
I get that. I get that. But these flights per se.
On their own? No. It doesn't presage war, but the problems in the Korean Peninsula could, and Russia is not going to stand by no matter how things are resolved in any major conflict area in the world. That they've made that abundantly clear. Mm. And so whether it's Korea or whether it's Iran, this is also partly Russia saying, we need to be at the table on these big questions, and also trying to figure out how, what is the U.S.'s level of attention,
Well, I just can't understand
that's
this.
The way of getting it.
Okay, we're almost done with this conversation, so here's just mm-hmm. another really naive question for me. I can't imagine Russia or anybody wanting to ally themselves with North Korea or Iran or, or Assad. They're the bad guys. They do bad things. Why would you want? Why would you pick that horse, for crying out loud? If your real interest is world peace or world stability, why would you choose those characters?
Russia's interest is in steering questions in the world in terms of security, foreign policy, the global economy, even in directions that benefit Russia. And clearly Russia has benefited Russia's foreign policy interests through its actions in Syria. It's expanded its ability to sway outcomes in a direction that it would like to see them go, if only by undermining the United States or the EU's ability to sway outcomes the way they would like it to go.
I guess so.
That's a win for Russia, why they would, I'm not saying they would ally or side themselves with North Korea, but by having a say in what happens there, that can only benefit Russia.
Joel Ostro is a guy who knows a little bit more about Russia than you and me, professor of political science at Benedictine University. I'll call you again, Joel. I always appreciate your time.
Oh, it's terrific. Thanks so much, Jim.
Say, well, it's a 2:20, but still, this whole conversation does make me think about Dr. Strangelove. And there's one little scene in there that has to be played in a minute. A couple of texts here. This one from 630. Kathleen in Willowbrook says, so disappointed that Sarah Palin is not on this Russia thing. She could shoot them down from her porch. This one says, to respond to your comment about why does Russia associate with Syria and Iran, America has relations with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has human rights track record on a par with Iran, far worse than Syria. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the text. David wanted to jump here in here anyway. Hey, David, this is John.
Yes, John. First of all, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Second of all, I was going to tell your guest the reason Russians are in Mediterranean and supporting Assad is because they want to have a permanent place on the warships right on the Mediterranean, just like Americans are since fleet in Bahrain. That's the only reason they're supporting Assad.
And what do you say about that?
You talking to me?
Yeah, I sure am.
Well, you were talking about why they're dealing with bad people.
Yeah.
Like Iran and Syria.
I guess you're saying that end justifies that means. So that means that end justifies the means then, huh?
Yes. Of course.
Well, but I don't know that everybody agrees with you on that. That's why I asked that question, David. And what do you say to that? Because I think some people would say, well, I get that, but there's got to be a better or a different way than supporting that guy.
But, John, nobody talks about that.
Yeah.
I mean, the Russians want to be in the Mediterranean. They want to be there permanently, just like Americans are.
Yeah. I don't mind us being there, though. We're the good guys, David.
I know, but nobody talks about it. Nobody says why they're there.
I appreciate your phone call. You know, no, listen, you're right. If that's the objective, you're right. That does not get talked about a lot. And I appreciate you bringing it up. Okay, but just give me a second to do this, because when you talk about the United States planning on what to do with Russia, they've got nuclear weapons, we've got nuclear weapons. Does your brain go here?
If, on the other hand, we were to immediately launch an all-out and coordinated attack on all their airfields and missile bases, we'd stand a damn good chance of catching them with their pants down. Hell, we got a 5-1 missile superiority as it is. We could easily assign 3 missiles to every target and still have a very effective reserve force for any other contingency. An unofficial study, which we undertook of this eventuality, indicated that we would destroy 90% of their nuclear capabilities. We would therefore prevail and suffer only modest and acceptable civilian casualties from the remaining force, which would be badly damaged and uncoordinated.
General, it is the avowed policy of our country never to strike first with nuclear weapons.
Mr. President, it is necessary to choose between 2 admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless distinguishable post-war environments. One where you got 20 million people killed, and the other where you got 150 million people killed.
You're talking about mass murder, General, not war.
Mr. President, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, but I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, tops, depending on the breaks.
I will not go down in history as the greatest mass murderer since Adolf Hitler.
Perhaps it might be better, Mr. President, if you were more concerned with the American people than with your image in the history books.
George C. Scott's so good in that. That movie Travels. Have you watched that lately, Bob? Have you gone back?
I haven't, no.
I'm telling you, go back and watch that thing.
That one, and then there's Failsafe, which has a similar plot device in it. That one's dramatic.
Yeah, this one, one is both. This one is like scary dramatic. You go, yeah, it's kind of like that, but it's so dark and funny. That it's
all of Kubrick's movies.
It's fun to watch.
Have their own certain flavors, you know. They're all so different.
You a Kubrick fan?
Oh, I love Stanley Kubrick. 2001 is my favorite.
That's the first movie I took my wife to. And if you ask Brenda today, go, what was the first movie? What was your first date with John? My wife will tell you. Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. They were showing 2001 on campus. We went to McDonald's. She had money. I did not. It's not like I wouldn't pay. I just didn't have any money back then. And then we went to the free movie 2001, A Space Odyssey. I thought that was a swell date. At the date, we sat down in the movie, and the apes throw the bone in the air, and Brenda went to sleep. If you ask her today, what is 2001, A Space Odyssey about, she will tell you, well, there's these monkeys, and they're hitting some bones with some sticks, and that's all she's got for you on that movie.
Oh, she missed all the good stuff.
Because there's some stuff about space in there, too, and she's not too keen to that.
Not 2001, A Monkey Odyssey. I mean, it is, but there's more.
But there's more to it than that.